I'm Dee Mae Roberts, stage and studio. We're going to be featuring OSF and Oregon Shakespeare Festival in a few moments, but we're also going to go backstage to an African-American production of Tennessee Williams' A Streetcar Named Desire at Portland Center Stage. With me on the phone is Christopher Acebo, Associate Artistic Director of the Oregon Shakespeare Festival. Hello, Christopher.
Hello.
Hey.
How are you? Good morning.
Good. It's good to hear your voice. You're off to a great start at OSF in the 2016 season. This year, 10 plays. You've opened Twelfth Night, Great Expectations, The Yeoman of the Guard, and three plays I hadn't heard of before, but I'm looking forward to, Viet Gone and Roe and the River Bride. Actually, you know, I think most people have heard of Twelfth Night, Great Expectations, Yeoman of the Guard. Would you tell us a little bit about the last three plays, starting with Viet Gone?
Sure, absolutely. So Viet Gone is a production that will run through the end of our season here at OSF, so through October. It's a new play written. It's not a commission by the Oregon Shakespeare Festival, but it's a play that we read and kind of fell in love with, written by Kwi Nguyen and directed by May Adralis. It's a love story in the context of a family in Vietnam, it's funny, it's poignant, it's been a huge success for us, and it really brings a new voice to the American theater in Kwi's writing.
He's really looking at it from the Vietnamese perspective of the Vietnam War during that time and its legacy and its impact.
Yes,
that's exciting, and I don't think it's been done. So I think that it's great that Kwi Nguyen wrote that. That's amazing that you're producing it. Roe, is that Roe v. Wade? Is that focused totally on Roe v. Wade?
Yeah, it is. It's, a world premiere by Lisa Loomer. It's part of our American Revolutions commissioning process. Project directed by Bill Rausch, our artistic director, and it's looking at the women behind this very powerful story. Sarah Weddington, who was the lawyer who brought Roe to the Supreme Court, and Norma, who's Roe, and it's kind of their life, their journeys, both before how they met and then post.
What happened afterwards?
Yeah, what happened afterwards.
We follow up with what happened. What's an important topic? You know, I hate to say, sad to say, still today. You know, whether or not choice is a woman's choice or not, and it has to go to the Supreme Court level is amazing to me. And so this tells that story. The River Bride, another play I hadn't heard of. Would you talk about that?
Yeah, absolutely. So The River Bride is a play by Maricela Horta, and it's based on a Brazilian folk tale. And it's one of those plays where I just can't really talk too much about it because there are some surprises and some secrets in the play but it's a beautiful production. The context again being really diving in and finding love and the risks that you have to take to be with someone, and it's just a beautiful, beautiful rendering of that folk story.
And then you have these big productions. You designed Twelfth Night, didn't you? Would you talk a little bit about the design of Twelfth Night? I mean,
sure.
You know, if everybody knows, that's Shakespeare's Twelfth Night. It's a comedy, and it's got a lot of fun elements to it.
It's a really fun production, and it's running all year long, yes, I designed the set. We set it in 1930s Hollywood, and so it has a little bit of that iconography, both in terms of the design and also some of the characters. So it's really, a very smart, funny, and very touching production of that play, because that play has some darker elements to it that I think are showcased really well in this production. It's a good balance of all of those really wonderful things.
And you're also designing The Wiz, which is not a production that I see very often. And
yes,
I was so, you know, it's sad for me to say that the TV version recently in NBC, which was wonderful, was the first time I'd actually seen it. And I'm looking forward to actually seeing it on a stage.
Yeah,
so talk about that.
I'm really excited about it. I just went to the first act run through last Friday. It is going to be really, there's some powerful vocals really beautiful singers and actors and dancers in the show, and that story in the Elizabethan theater is going to be pretty phenomenal.
Oh, it's outdoors.
Yeah, it's outdoors.
Oh, big
yeah.
musical outdoors.
Yeah.
You know, a take on The Wizard of Oz from an African-American perspective. It's going to be lovely.
Yeah, I think it's going to be really terrific.
So is there an overall theme, would you say, to this season at OSF?
That's a really good question. You know, in seasons past, themes emerge. But I'm not sure if I've kind of grasped the theme for this season. I think all of these plays are being authentic to their creation, and the artists involved are really pushing the boundaries of joy and love and community. So I think those themes are running through the plays. But there's nothing that's kind of galvanizing in terms of that.
Well, I also think it's exciting that you're doing two Asian, you know, I don't want to say Asian American plays, but A Winter's Tale, you know, is actually Shakespeare, but it's set, one part of it is set in dynastic China and the other in the Old West. So I'm looking forward to that. Is that also on the Elizabethan?
Yes, so that's also going to be on the Elizabethan stage. It opens with Twelfth Night, and then the third show out there is Hamlet. And yes, Winter's Tale and also obviously our production of Viet Gong have a majority of API actors in them, and looking at framing the Winter's Tale through that lens is really exciting to us. We're hosting CADA, which is a consortium of Asian American theaters in America, festival and conference here at the Oregon Shakespeare Festival.
Yeah, and that's the first week of October, October 1st through 9th,
right.
And it's going to be a big deal. So that's great that you're hosting it and you're doing two AAPI productions.
Yeah.
That kudos all around. That's great that you're moving the conversation forward, which is OSF has always done, especially regarding, you know, people of color, actors of color, you know, and artists of color.
Yeah, I think it's way past being important. It's kind of necessary to reflect the United States in all of the ways that we do, and especially in our art form. I think OSF has always been on the forefront of inclusion work, and you know, I think visibly you can see it in our acting company, but also in other areas at the festival that audiences may not have access to in terms of our production and administration, and making sure that there's representation at all the tables that decisions are being made at is really a really important value that the Oregon Shakespeare Festival holds.
Well, OSF has always been ahead of the curve regarding multicultural casting as well as staffing, so kudos all around. What plays are you the most excited about in the last, like, 15 seconds here? Just list them off.
Of this season?
Yeah, this season.
Yes. You know, I do think the things that kind of surprise me and stir me up a little bit, you know, I do think that Viet Gong is a play that everybody should see because it does look at a war that we look at from an American perspective. To see it from the Vietnamese perspective is really fascinating and eye-opening and heart-opening. I do think Ro is a, you know, there's a lot of the story there that we don't know, or, you know, I didn't know very much about in terms of these women and what they went through and their relationship and their kind of journey. So, again, surprising things about our own history that kind of get illuminated in that play. And then just for, you know, sheer fun and excitement, you know, like The Wiz and Twelfth Night are really joyous and also celebrating community in different ways. You know, those shows just are really, really fun. And then Yeoman of the Guard, which we really didn't mention, which was, you know, this a production by Sean Graney based on the Gilbert and Sullivan operetta that's being done in our smaller space in a promenade performance.
Well, it's a great mix of seasons. We have to actually running out of time,
yes.
Christopher.
Oh, yeah,
but
I'm sorry.
But thank you. No, I really
thank
appreciate you
so
taking
much.
The time. Christopher Acebo, Associate Artistic Director of Oregon Shakespeare Festival. Thank you so much for taking the time and joining us today during our membership drive.
thank you. My pleasure.
And
thank
you can
so much.
Thank you. And the Oregon Shakespeare Festival continues through October in Ashland, Oregon, and their number is 800-219-8168, or you can visit osf.org or stageandstudio.org or kbu.fm/stageandstudio. Next up, we have Chris Coleman, Artistic Director of Portland Center Stage. He's directing an African-American production of Tennessee Williams' 1949 classic featuring the iconic characters of Blanche DuBois and Stanley Kowalski in A Streetcar Named Desire. I went backstage, with Chris Coleman at PCS, and he gave me a sneak peek at what the New Orleans set will look like.
Over here on the left side is Stanley and Stella's bedroom. You know, part of the tension of this play is they're in extremely tight quarters. They're in tight quarters for two people, but certainly for three people, it's really tricky. And so that one of the goals of the design was to get people in like on top of each other. So you got a little humble bed, you got a little dresser stuffed up right behind it. You have her little vanity table. The bathroom is right above it, and you can see, you know, you got a little, it's going to working sink and toilet and bathtub because Blanche hangs out up there in several scenes. And then they have commandeered this little tiny bunk for Blanche that, you know, doesn't look very comfortable. And
it's a little cot.
It's a little cot, you know, and she then kind of commandeers that and builds a little universe around it with crates and a fan, kind of makes herself a little nightstand.
And is it in the living room?
It's in the living room. It's right here where, you know, they eat and where the guys play poker. And
she hardly feels welcome if she's sitting on a cot next to the dining room table.
No,
right?
Exactly. In fact, there is in the opening scene, there is kind of some language about that, that it's not the most comfortable sleeping palette you could imagine.
Now, originally, Chris Coleman of Portland Center Stage wanted to direct Russell Hornsby of the TV show Grimm as Stanley Kowalski in Streetcar Named Desire, but Russell had to drop out. So Coleman decided to keep exploring an African-American production of Tennessee Williams' play. So I talk with Chris Coleman in the rehearsal hall of Portland Center Stage.
And then I began to research and see, you know, would it even make any sense? And the French Quarter, New Orleans in general, was one of the most integrated. It was more integrated earlier than any city in America. And certainly folks in the French Quarter and around the French Quarter, you know, there's all kinds of different ethnicities living together. So it actually sounds pretty beautiful coming out of their mouths, and I think it's going to be interesting.
It's one of the first places in New Orleans where, you know, mixed race people were accepted.
Absolutely, absolutely. So that's kind of a really fun thing to explore in this world, and the social stratification within that world.
So Russell had to go to another project, but you kept the whole theme, right?
I did, and Russell had given me a gift, which I didn't realize until we got into rehearsal. We were trying to find a Blanche, and I had mentioned an old friend of mine that he knew well from Los Angeles, Deidre Henry, as a Stella possibility. And Deidre is, she is on this, another NBC show, Game of Silence, that just started airing about a month ago. But I directed her in my very first full-length play when I was a babe and she was a baby-er. But she won a bunch of acting awards down in L.A. And, you know, he said, you know, I don't know if she's a Stella because she's so strong. A couple months later, he said, you know, I cannot get Deidre Henry out of my head. I cannot think of anybody in the country who would be a more interesting Blanche. And so I made her the offer, and she agreed quickly. And then she was able to help us get Demetrius on board, Demetrius Gross, who's now playing Stanley, and he is also quite fantastic. So it's exciting. Yeah, and you know, of course, Blanche is such a complex character because she was raised in the elite, you know, with a lot of money and with a lot of heirs. And, you know, if she was a black woman in this period, she probably went to Spelman and then studied, you know, in Paris. And they thought she was going to marry the, you know, wealthiest guy in the county and save the family. You know, she's coming apart at the seams.
So have you had to change Tennessee Williams' script at all because it is an African-American cast?
Well, luckily, there was a production done on Broadway maybe 5 years ago by Emily Mann, who was the director who runs the McCarter Theater in New Jersey. Emily's also a playwright, and she got permission from the estate to change a couple of references and then edit some references. Mostly, you know, there's a fair amount of stuff in the original about Stanley being a Polack,
Yeah, I was going to mention, I'm not mentioning that specifically. But there are references like that.
And so she kind of, she trimmed most of it, and then the couple of references where you need something, she made a substitute, and she got the estate to sign off on it. But that's basically it. Everything else, oh, you know, the other thing they changed, they're going out in the second scene, they're going out to, in the original, it's Galatoire's. I think it's, you know, kind of a famous club. Well, black people wouldn't have been allowed in that club, so they substituted Dookie Chase, which they would have been allowed in. So, you know, little things like that.
Okay, well, that's those little teeny changes like that. Yeah. But everything else holds
up. Everything else is the play. Yeah, and it's amazing how it holds up, how it makes sense, actually.
It's a difficult play just because of the themes. You know, you've got somebody who is totally an anachronism to today's world with Stanley, you know, and his macho aspect, you know, and his brutality. And you've got a frail woman, you know? I mean, a couple of frail women, actually, you know, who are going through things. How do you make that pertinent to, I guess, how we view gender these days?
Well, what I think is interesting is Blanche, I don't think she's frail. You know, and Deidre emailed me maybe a month before we started, and she said, I'm terrified. Well, I'm so strong, I fear that I may not be able to be convincing in her, the fragility. And I said, well, you know, I don't think it's that Blanche is not strong. I think it's that her banks are overflowing. She has been through so many traumas, and she didn't have a therapist. You know, she didn't have anybody to disclose most of it to. So she drank too much, and she screwed the wrong people, and she is trying not to explode.
So she's trying to hold it together.
She is trying to hold it together, and, you know, eventually she doesn't, you know, succeed at that. Yes, it is a different social code.
I mean, Stanley is such a brute, and has that changed in this version of the play?
No, I mean, he is still pretty macho.
I mean, his animalism is what really, you know, I think made the play so powerful back in the 40s.
And I think you can't escape that. I mean, I think that is the sexuality, the sensuality, the need to dominate is the motor of the play. And really the fundamental conflict is that he and Blanche are both accustomed to dominating. She through manipulation and charm, and he through just, you know, blunt force. And they're on a collision course. So you have to have kind of the full power of both of those energies. At the same time, what's striking is Stanley's also has intense vulnerability, you know, in there are, you know, a couple of moments in the play that I think were probably very unusual for 1946, 49.
Well, the whole Stella scene, right? Crying out for Stella.
Yeah. And so there's a sensuality, and there is childlikeness in him. So, I don't know. It'll be very interesting to see, like, if people find him reprehensible today or understandable. That's a very interesting question.
Well, the power of Tennessee Williams is his poetic writing, you know, and creating these really unforgettable characters that are based semi-autobiographical, especially about his sister. Mm-hmm. How do you personally connect with this play so that you can bring out something new in it?
You know, I'm a Southern man.
That's right.
You know, grew up in Atlanta. My family got to Georgia in 1805.
Yeah, you're so Oregonian now.
Yeah,
I am.
Thank you.
But I have to remember, you're from you're from Georgia and Atlanta.
Well, and in some ways, I probably rejected that whole part of my history because, you know, I always felt like if you were a Southerner in America, you were viewed as second rate. So part of my quest to go to, you know, famous schools was to kind of overcome that hurdle, if you will. And I didn't have much interest when I started out directing in doing plays about Southern people. I was doing Brecht and Shakespeare and Shaw, and my mom passed in September, and
I'm sorry.
Thank you.
Yeah, that's a big passage.
It is a big passage, and you know, and she struggled with some issues that really debilitated her mental capacities in the last couple of years, and you start to get you become more curious about the human mind, the human spirit, what holds us together, what allows us to survive, what pulls us apart. And working on this play feels really close to me right now because trying to understand the psychology of someone like a Blanche who has experienced so much trauma and not been able to digest it is really heartbreaking and fascinating to try to tell the truth about. The other thing is, I think hearing this story come out of African-American mouths with a group of actors who are truth tellers is pretty astounding, because it feels like it was written for them. You know, it doesn't feel like, oh, that's odd. It just feels like, oh, that makes sense in a way that I had never considered. So it's a pretty fascinating process.
I'm Dee Mae Roberts, Stage and Studio. That was Chris Coleman, Artistic Director of Portland Center Stage, talking about what's sure to be a profound production of the African-American production of Tennessee Williams, A Streetcar Named Desire. The show runs May 14th through June 19th, Portland Center Stage, Tuesday through Sunday at 7:30, Saturday and Sundays at 2, and Thursdays at noon. More info at pcs.org. That's it for Stage and Studio. I'm Dee Mae Roberts. Thanks for joining us on this membership drive show.